Good evening, everyone. It's now 6 o'clock, so we're about to start. So I shall read the notice. Please note that this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council's website. In addition, please be advised that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to the Democratic Services Officer who is administering the meeting. So, good evening everyone. Hope you had a good new year. I think moving forward, I think actually the first thing I want to do is to, for a few seconds, ski off piste. Because I got an email today, and this is a quick advert for Loughborough. It says it's something. It's from Bertie Mitchell. I want to remind Loughborough councillors that the Loughborough Half Marathon is happening on the 29th of March, and is supported the charity of Living Without Abuse. And she asked, could we mention it at the meeting? And I says, okay, I'll mention it at the meeting. So I've then mentioned it at the meeting.
I'm assuming,
Colin, they also invited you to actually...
they are looking
at it. It's not nice to anyone else to it.
But of course, if anyone wishes to volunteer, feel free. Oh, if we have one volunteer. So I said I would mention it at the meeting, so I've now done so.
And perhaps we can put their email contact email
yes.
in the minute.
So moving forward to the agenda proper, apologies for absence, I think, with it.
We've had apologies from Councillor Julie Bradshaw and also from Councillor Emma Ward.
Right, thank you. No apologies, so I think we've pretty much got a full house, haven't we, this
evening? I don't know about
Rory. Oh, yes. I've received no communications from Councillor Council.
You'd know if you were.
Okay, thanks for that. So, moving on to minutes of the previous meeting, to approve the minutes of the previous meeting held on 18th of September. So, if there's any comments on factual accuracy, or do we consider the meetings approved? Any comments? Are these minutes therefore approved? I think the minutes are approved. Yeah, okay. Thank you for that. Moving forward to item 3, which is disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests.
Item 9, Chair. My daughter has one of the named allotments, but I've had no communication with her, so I don't believe it bars me from taking part in the discussion.
For that. Councillor Parks.
Yes, I'm a member of the Loughborough Town team. I was a member of Leicestershire County Council. Labour Collective, and I was on the working group for the Bedford Square, Ward's End and Devonshire Square redevelopment.
And for that, any other declarations? Okay, no more disclosures. Item 4, questions under committee procedure 12.8, there were no questions submitted. So moving on to Loughborough Special Expenses Draft Budget 2021. So we're expecting Head of Streets support to come.
Yes, the Head of Finance and Properties.
Head of Finance and Properties. Right. Okay.
I'd like to advise the draft budget that's set out on page 10 of the report. This is a draft budget, and it includes an increase in the tax base of 1.75% and an increase in the rate of 1.99%. And there's also been an ongoing request for £5,000 to be added in for the Remembrance Day parade. If anybody's got any questions on any of the information on page 10, 11 and 12, I'll happily take that information now. All my colleagues will be able to help answering those. Just to say that the final budget will go to Cabinet on the 14th of February. The base is actually slightly higher at 2.7% increase, which gives an extra £11,000 to this budget. All the services remain the same as last year, apart from the Remembrance Sunday that's been added in as an extra cost to the council, sort of a special rate.
Has anyone any questions? Councillor Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the Remembrance Day one, can I just ask who's asked for it and why is it in? Is it in this one? I can't see it in this one, is it?
Me too, yes, please. Sylvia Wright, Head of Leisure and Culture. Traditionally, the Remembrance Day parade has been delivered under the Mayor Democratic Services. Because of the size and complexity of the event now, it was asked to be transferred into my area, or at least to support it because of our work on the fair and other big events. So the 5k represents some of the main infrastructure costs, which we would include like barriers, medical support, stewarding, because we have such big crowds. From the health and safety perspective, we need to make sure that we get the basics in there. So it's mainly to support the costs of delivering the Remembrance Day parade, which weren't,
Oh, thank you. I can understand the reasons why and the costs why, but I'm just surprised that we've had these days for a long time and the size of the parades has been massive for a long time. All of a sudden we're shifting it from one department and it goes into a special rate, and we haven't been consulted on it. This is the first time and we've been told it's going to be in there. So I'd rather we'd had this discussion maybe at the previous meeting to say actually we were looking to include this in the special rate. What do you think, Loughborough Councillors? And I think that would have been a better way of approaching it rather than it being presented to us as a fait accompli. Thank you.
Councillor Draycott.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just following on from that, if Democratic Services used to do it before, why hasn't the 5,000 transferred from there to your department to carry on with the work?
I'll try and explain, Chair, if I may. Adrian Ward, Head of Strategic Support. members around the table will be fully aware that the Remembrance Day Parade has gone on for a considerable number of years now. The role of the Democratic Services civic officers has very gradually over the years changed from a role that started off as making sure the mayor attended the event and looking after the mayor, with the British Legion taking on most of the organisation of the parade. The balance has moved very, very subtly over the years, because I think I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, the average age of the members of the British Legion has probably been increasing over the years, at the same time that the balance of responsibilities has changed, if that makes sense. And it's come to the point now where I think 12 months ago, in consultation with leisure and culture staff, we realised that the size of the event, the number of people that were attending, the possible risks associated with it, we did need, rather than the civic officers helping out as much as they could, we did need some sort of professional event management.
Yeah.
And traffic management
support. Comment in the sense that we need the debriefs for all of the different events that go, because we have the license for the town centre comes under my department. So we facilitate debriefs for all the different events, and we have to act on those debriefs. So if there's concerns brought up from different partners, from blue light services or whatever, we need to put the relevant measures in place to support the event. So that's basically, it's part, as Adrian has informed, but it's also to do with additional safety measures needing to be in place as advised from our from the police and other partners.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Draycott, continuing. I understand, and obviously Remembrance Day is now much larger and more people attend, so clarification is helpful. But there's also mention about an extra £11,000 being available. And going back to the point that Councillor Mayer made, we had this report previously December time, and there was a lot of dissatisfaction with members because there was no flexibility, no opportunity for us to make bids or to put something new forward. And so tonight we've got a new change, £5,000 added, and there's £11,000 available. So I doubt if at this stage we can actually do anything with that £11,000, because we can know, you know, to put a bid in and get it costed and what have you now as a committer. I just again can, you know, again say that I really don't think this process is working at all, Chair. And each time we have it, there's issues with it, and there's nothing we can do about it. It's all set in stone usually. But it'd be interesting to know about a bit more about the 11,000, Chair.
I'm happy to answer that, Councillor Draycott. The £11,000, we obviously reset the draft budget very early on in the process, and obviously we've got a draft council tax base that we get. Obviously, we put the draft together based on that prediction. It could have gone the other way, and we could have actually, you know, not made that extra money. But obviously, we were quite close in terms of that extra £11,000. This is a draft budget, though. It's not too late. There is an opportunity, but we obviously put in the final budget together in the next week or so. Mm-hmm. But the timing of this meeting and putting the draft together, the figures are very close. So I think that's good in its own sense. But I think I take your point. It is difficult to know what that council tax base is going to come out at.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. So, my understanding, we said there is an opportunity. Is there a mechanism by which something can be flagged?
Well, we did say at the last meeting, Chair, Councillor Draycott, we did say at the last meeting that we wanted to have more involvement during the year, because as the report shows, the variations through the year and the underspends and overspends, we have no say in that matter at all. And it's kind of presented to us as fait accompli when we get it at these meetings that we wanted to be more involved. And I don't actually see that still happening, and tonight is just compounding the problem, Chair. So maybe selfish Chair could take this up a bit further for the future.
Okay. Councillor Morgan.
Sorry, Councillor Morgan. Just to say, repeat really what was said at the last meeting, which was that there's an opportunity for the Chair to meet with any of the Cabinet members at any point throughout the whole year, discuss any items that might actually come up. My understanding is that actually there have been no discussions, no meetings requested by the Chair, no meetings requested by any members of this committee with any of the Cabinet members to discuss any funding proposals for any items at all in Loughborough. But that's always available, always has been. Any councillor is able to come forward and request a meeting with any councillor who's a cabinet member. But my understanding is that actually none of that has ever happened. It doesn't have to be done through meetings like this.
Councillor Park.
Chair, to clarify the timeline of events then, so if the Loughborough special expense goes to cabinet on the 14th of February, minutes are published a week before, so we've got a window of about 3 or 4 weeks to contact you. contact the member,
finance,
or the chair of this committee.
Well, this committee is not the decision making body, it's a consultation.
Right, okay.
Chair, could I just clarify on that point that Councillor Morgan has raised? The purpose of this report being brought before this committee tonight is as a consultation on the proposed Loughborough special rate budget, and the policy justification section of the report does make it clear that the consultation period runs until the 15th of January. So if this committee did wish to feed anything back during that consultation period, it's your opportunity this evening to do that.
Mr. Councillor Meehan.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarification from officers. The adjustments from year 2018-19 are £32,000. Is that a positive adjustment? As in, is that how much we had left over, actually? We didn't spend all the money last year, and that's what we've had left over. Is that correct? Is that my understanding? Or have I misunderstood it?
I think, no, that £31,000 is actually just to bring the budget down to the level to actually meet that council tax rate. So it is actually using the reserve that was left over from last year. So it is an adjusting item.
Okay, so did the previous year, did we use 148,000 from this reserve? And then this year we've used, this financial year gone, we're going to use £32,000.
That's right.
So how much is left in this reserve?
The reserve itself, there was only 26,000 there left in, so we've gone into negative. But like we say, with the 11,000, we've obviously, it's gone flipped the other way. But the way the Loughborough Special works, if we've got any under or overspends each year, it will have to be adjusted the following year. So we've always got to have that in mind when balancing this off.
Thank you for that.
My own clarification as well, because I did receive a tracking report just before Christmas. It was a bit late to actually kind of do anything about it. But from my understanding of going through it, and it might just be a misunderstanding, it looks like within years sometimes you do get monies moved around between pots, as perhaps reprioritisation takes place. Is that the case? It looks like you'll see quite a big underspend appearing somewhere and a big overspend, balancing it out somewhere else, as if a decision has been made to move monies. And because of course you start off with a budget and then you might, as knowledge comes, actually wish to kind of do a reprioritisation. Does that happen? Is there a mechanism by which that can be influenced by feedback from the committee?
And we do our revenue monitoring budgets 3 times a year, and under our financial regulations, we have got a buyment opportunity to move budgets from one area of overspend or underspend to compensate, to balance it off, and it's down to each budget officer to manage their budgets within the financial regulations. So that's happening all the time, and 3 times a year we obviously bring those monitoring reports to scrutiny panel, corporate scrutiny, have the opportunity to go through those.
Yeah, so again, for my clarification, at times I wasn't clear if the underspend was genuine in as much as it came underspent, but whether it was a willful decision had been made to deliberately not allocate, move resource, and then it appears, when you look at the monies, it appears like an underspend because a choice has been moved. I think in the case it might have just been resourcing effort from one area to another because they felt that they needed more effort over here, and that appears as quite a big underspend in one pot, like an overspend, no, just to balance it out. Rather than an actual, we spent less money than we expected, we have deliberately chosen to reprioritise.
And if I can just answer that question, I mean, when we set the budget that we realistically think that's the amount of expenditure that needed on that particular budget line. Obviously, throughout the year, things happen and change as we go along, but I think in terms of reconciling and balancing those budget lines, each budget officer has a duty to make sure that they don't go, they're not overspending on these lines. So they do sort of sometimes manage it in that way. But we have got financial regulations that ensure that our buyment policies are in place, and we do actively move budgets at a certain amount.
I just wanted to think where it was an actual, almost like a policy decision rather than a kind of financial one. Actually, it turns out that we want to move money from here to here for this reason, and then that was a process of what that happens, and then that is signed off. In which case, it's a kind of a thing that a decision is being made, and therefore one of the inputs of that decision could be the views of Loughborough councillors.
as we go through the year. I was from my understanding as to what I was actually seeing.
Cheers, thank you. I've got some queries on a couple of lines here. Town centre management, if I start with that first, it cost us near £100,000 a year to look after the town centre. And I just wanted to know what that is made out of, because if we didn't have a market in Loughborough at all, we would spend that £100,000. Is that £100,000 netted from anything? Does it cost us actually more, and because we get market income in from the stallholders, is that netted, or does that income go somewhere else? Can you clarify that?
Head of Leisure and Culture. Basically, in that budget, there's staffing costs, and I think at the last meeting we did actually go into the detail of this budget, so it does include staffing in there that look at supporting the town centre. That's not really the markets, but it is, obviously it's all integrated. There is an income line in there of 26,000 that comes in from street trading consents. But obviously this is a net budget in the sense that it's taking the expenditure and income and giving you a net figure. But there's other things in there that are supported in that budget, like the delivery of the Christmas programme, and different events that go on in the town centre. And if we're hiring equipment like the big TV, the big stage and things like that, that would come out of that budget.
Okay, because that's a big budget. When you look at everything apart from and then the fair, the street fair, that's my second query and last query that I've got on this budget. The November fair, it's a fantastic event, but it only nets us £8,000 a year, which, if we're looking at ways to improve our expenses and be able to spend money, I think it's not just the Loughborough Select expenses, but the council as a whole, we have to look at where our income comes and how we can maximise that income. But I'll be honest to know that of the 4 days, 4.5 days that we have the town centre closed, if that's a fair return of £8,000 to the council.
What I would say is that the figures that you're looking at is the non-controllable costs. So from a controllable budget, the one that I manage above the line, and that brings an income in of around 63,000. There are, obviously, there's a cost that support services look against that. The income brought in from the rents of the pitches alone comes to 88,000. And then there's other income that comes in from other lines like parking or other things like that. So it does generate in excess of 90,000 income, the fair itself. But obviously, it is a massive operation. We have to have a security company that we pay overnight as well, 4 days, to manage the road closures. And we've got traffic management plans. There's an awful lot of people involved in the fair. So what I would say is that, we've got a detailed breakdown of each line, and everything is calculated and to be delivered in the most efficient and effective manner, but you have to take safety into account.
No, that's fine. That chair through yourself. That's interesting because it's gone now, but the next fair is November, and it gives a lot of time to have a look at this, I think, because I'll be interested to see if the costs involved and where they go and where they come from, the income comes from, and when that income goes. And I think that might be a good for a future paper that we had with the markets last time round, just to give us a bit more knowledge of the workings of some of these lines.
Mm-hmm. So a breakdown could be provided.
I would just say, Chair, from a non-financial point of view, the amount of publicity and pleasure it gives to the population of Charnwood and beyond is infinitely more than that figure. Especially this year, it was got received excellent feedback.
And I'm aware it brings people from quite a distance to come to Loughborough. It brings them from the cities, from Nottingham and Leicester.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thanks for that. Any other questions? Right, so I think this is some feedback this evening. Now, again, just checking from my understanding, did you say it's the 15th of January, the possibility for people to have comments?
On page 8, it was the consultation period up to the 15th of January.
And if any councillor wishes to kind of make any comment, how do they do this? To whom do they contact?
Well, they could do it individually, Chair, but obviously the committee as a whole has the opportunity to, if somebody wants to propose something and the committee agrees on it, the committee could then submit those proposals as part of the consultation as an alternative to councillors doing it individually.
Well, I'd like to suggest, I went to Nottingham this year to watch the fireworks, and it was an absolutely fantastic evening, to look at the possibility of working with private sector sponsorship to put an event on in London.
One in heaven.
Through the chair.
Through the chair. Councillor Harris, Kay Harris, we do have an up and running event in London, which could do with some support. So rather than going to Nottingham, I suggest that we stay at home and support them.
And how is that funded? Is it sponsored?
It's self-financing through entrance fees and run by volunteers.
Councillor Morgan?
Chair, I'm aware of two things. One, we've got seven items, meeting items on the agenda,
yeah, okay.
And we've got about an hour and a half left of our 2 hour slot. It's the first day back for many officers. I hope that we can get away within the 2 hour slot because, to be frank, it's probably not fair for a lot of officers to be sitting here beyond that on their first day back after Christmas. And also, as far as individual consultations to this budget, perhaps that might be a quicker way and also an opportunity for people to really think about any particular items that they have rather than actually this committee to actually then mull over and go through. I'm just aware of timing that it might be better for people to actually do it individually if they have any particular comments.
Thank you for that. Well, one is aware it's 15th of January, so that is communicated by then. Thank you very much. If there's no other questions, we can move on to the item 6, which is the Loughborough Town Centre Master Plan Progress Report.
Am I speaking? Right. Good evening. I'm David Hankin, Team Leader for Economic Development and Regeneration. in response to your request, I've tabled a report this evening. The key milestones I expect are the fact that the master plan was adopted in April 2018 and is now moving forward into the implementation phases. I should say, as plans go, master plans are rather unusual. They're more like a package of levers and possibilities. If it's not been facile, I remember picking up a Lego kit and you could be confident that there's a plan in that box and that all the pieces were there and that those pieces would assemble to deliver whatever was on the box at the start of the exercise. Town Centre Master Plan is far more complicated. It's about setting a context, building partnerships, demonstrating the art of the possible, and working with partners in a cash-strapped environment to try to deliver the sort of town centre that we would like to see Loughborough develop into. In terms of the master plan itself, the key components of the master plan are around trying to introduce improvements to the public realm, the main streets and thoroughfares, changes to the movement network, i.e. roads, car parking, the definition of character areas to recognise what it is that makes parts of our town different and special, unique, what it is that gives Loughborough a particular appeal and attraction over and above other centres. And as part of that, there's identification of opportunities, and they are, I'm afraid, few and far between, but opportunities for opportunity sites to encourage development. And then the key part of this particular master plan has been around what we call small non-physical interventions. All of the public realm works, the opportunity sites, we're talking about huge capital projects that take time, effort, energy, and not least an awful lot of money to put together. Whereas the small interventions are all sorts of activities, the sort of thing that Sylvia was outlining earlier, around creating activities and events that bring people into the town centre to increase footfall, lower cost, higher frequency, easier to stage, although some of them can be challenging than themselves, but a rolling programme of those sort of events can generate additional footfall. So in terms of delivery of the master plan, we're working with the Loughborough town team drawing from representation from a broad range of town centre businesses and organisations and partners involved in the delivery of services in the town centre, such as the County Council. In terms of the recent range of outputs, you'll be looking in more detail shortly at the Charnwood Draft Local Plan. The Master Plan has been a key piece of the evidence base which informs the Master Plan. So key proposals in the plan around what we're trying to achieve in generating Loughborough, the policies for encouraging regeneration in Loughborough, the definition of the town centre, the retail core area, the primary frontages, all of those policies are informed by the research undertaken as part of the town centre master plan. In terms of things physically happening, things are happening, and it might be stretching a point to say that necessarily the plan has taken the lead, but it has set the context in which private sector investors particularly are looking very seriously at Loughborough. Some examples of what is going on: the Ombury Gap site is now being developed, albeit after a degree of controversy over the style and the character of development. Nevertheless, it indicates a degree of confidence in Loughborough on the part of a major investor. Similarly, we are seeing schemes just off centre on Nottingham Road, delivering housing schemes, the old 3M site and the old public house site on Nottingham Road, and at Pennine House on Leamington Street, where again we're seeing significant private sector investment in delivery of both apartments and student housing. There are other discussions going on. I mentioned here four other town centre or edge of centre schemes. Actually, there are now five. There was an extra one on the list this morning. These are confidential at this stage because we are approached confidentially by prospective investors. But again, it's indication of a degree of interest that is developing in and around Loughborough town centre in the delivery of general housing in the centre and student housing. Both of which you can bring higher footfall, a captive audience, one might say, to support a range of shops and businesses within the town centre. We continue to work with our partners on the prospect of delivering the generator, the old familiar Loughborough University School of Art and Design building on Frederick Street. We have earlier given some financial support to that. The support is now more one of moral support, but again working with the community interest company to try and deliver a creative business centre. I mentioned in introduction that we were looking at a range of public realm improvement schemes. These are challenges, and we'll return to the Bedford Square one later on the agenda. But Bedford Square Gateway includes Bedford Square, Water End, Devonshire Square, and the side streets of South Street and Bedford. And Southfield Lane. It's a project which has been some time in gestation, but it's indicative, I think, of when I say these projects, public realm projects, can be extremely resource and finance hungry in terms of their delivery. This is the first one that we're really trying to get delivered, but as we'll come on to later, it's quite a journey to move it forward. We're working in the early stages of the lane strategy. Again, this was recognised in the master plan as being an element of the town centre where we could look to improve footfall by making the secondary network of streets attractive. Some of those streets at the moment are poorly lit, poorly maintained, but they could, if they are properly maintained and kept, add to the character of the town and provide opportunities for public art as well. And the Ladybird Collective is one of the private sector schemes which has come forward as a means of trying to introduce some additional interest and colour into the town centre through a series of approved murals. There's work going on in terms of placemaking action plan, and this is where we moved into what we quite call the softer, smaller scale interventions. So there's an active programme throughout the year, and you will have seen many of those and have probably been a customer of many of those activities and events. Behind the pattern, Sylvia's team are working on three marketing campaigns across the whole 12-month period. And they're supported by a range of literature and material to raise awareness, coordinate activities and events. So the first of those we've recently had experience of is the Magical Christmas campaign, clearly with the pantomime at the core of that, being used as a means of marketing the town centre and encouraging wider. We're on the threshold of the Love Loughborough campaign, when the pink hearts re-emerge around the marketplace and beyond this year, so looking to extend that themed lighting. These are projects which I should have said are undertaken very closely in partnership with the Business Improvement District and indeed other partners as well. And then there will be a further campaign later in the year, the Celebrate Loughborough campaign, which will dovetail with Loughborough in Bloom, Picnic in the Park and the Diwali, which will bring us the full 12-month cycle. The festive lighting scheme I've simply mentioned there is an indication of a significant improvement that has been made. It arrived last year, but I think has made quite a significant splash again this year in terms of creating the sort of town centre experience that brings higher footfall to the town. And finally, there's been work on the market review, and the first stages of that resulting in a successful rebranding of the market. And again, looking to work with colleagues to open up new opportunities for the market. Particularly for a food, effective food market. Things which sound quite simple, such as that, necessarily involve providing electricity supplies, etc. And so it is some of the works behind the scenes, which probably doesn't get seen very often, but which is part, again, of the overall ambit and remit of the town centre master plan. At that chair, I'm happy to take any questions that members may have.
Any questions? Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, Mr. Hankin, thank you for your report. It's very, very comprehensive and very interesting. My question relates particularly to paragraph 7 and 8. I am a councillor for Storer Ward, where we have part of the ward is a huge student population, so I'm always interested in items that refer to student accommodation. And of course we could include paragraph 6 as well. We talk about these new developments that will provide, in theory, accommodation for students. And there's a considerable amount there. But there are also student developments in the town directed at students. Not all of these are full. They don't all have students in them. They're empty. And I know the argument is that if we build specific accommodation for students, that will free up family houses in places like Storer Road and Station Street, all the rest of it. But what I really want to know is, what if these developments don't come to fruition? What if they are all not let to students? What happens then? Is there a contingency plan? What do we do with this accommodation?
Okay. It's for the market to decide, effectively, what the level of student housing will be. What we are seeing is if you like, a third or fourth generation of student housing. The first generation were the terraced houses. The second generation were fairly basic apartments with one flat, a shared bathroom, etc. We're seeing now a growth in a far more sophisticated type of student housing, which appears to be what modern students are demanding, with a higher quality of on-site facilities and amenities, effective Wi-Fi, all that sort of thing. But the short answer to that is that the market will determine what the level of student housing should be. What I was anxious to do in this paper, actually, was to point out that, yes, over recent years, we have seen a good deal of student housing coming to Loughborough Town Centre. But in the last 3 years or so, we are seeing, for the first time I can recall, some fairly significant apartment building. So what we see in the 3M building, I think it's the old George Public House on Nottingham Road, and these other schemes which I can only hint at this evening, I'm afraid, we are seeing a resurgence in interest in building apartments for, I'm loath to say the word family homes, but for general market occupation. So we are seeing, yes, there's obviously a buoyant student housing market in Loughborough, but the indications are that there is quite a significant revival in interest in general housing provision through apartments within and around the town centre.
So you are saying then that if these don't go to students, there is a market for single professionals and others to take up the slack, as it were?
I don't know if it has of that. I'm not in the agency business, but I would assume that what appears, what the student housing providers are telling us, is that the modern student is more discerning, and they are looking for this higher quality accommodation. It follows that they will be less inclined then to support the second or third generation type student housing. And the owners of those properties will have to look to what they can do to safeguard their investment. Now, that might mean redeveloping sites, it might mean looking at alternative markets, but it's effectively without our control as to what they do with those.
Thank you. I do appreciate what you say, the market decides, but when you're faced with a row of terrace houses that are empty because there are no students, there are no takers, and you know that they would make really nice family homes, it can become very frustrating.
Logic would dictate that there comes a point where the property owner realises that his market has gone. Now they might hold out for a number of years in the hope that their market returns. But there is bound to come a point at which There's a recognition that the market, the demands of the market have shifted, and those terraced houses, if they were persistently vacant, I would expect the landowners then to look to market those more generally.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Mercer.
Councillor Mercer, can I just go on from Councillor Forrest's point? What worries me is that the student accommodation in Loughborough is already denying us 4.5 million in council tax. And I was slightly shocked, and some of your colleagues didn't realise, is that these student blocks are given exemption from paying council tax. So whereas everybody else has to pay council tax on empty properties, these aren't. So who takes that decision to actually give them this exemption? And my concern about, I accept absolutely we need to find accommodation for the students, but quite a few traders in Loughborough have said to me that the more Loughborough is dominated by students, the more difficult it is for them to sustain their business during university holidays. And some of them have said, we're already thinking of moving. One of them said, I'm actually moving as far as Sheffield because I cannot sustain myself during these periods of time. So I don't recall much discussion about this when we were discussing the master plan, the other impact that student accommodation is having. So my main question was, who takes this decision about giving the exemption, and do we have to do that?
My understanding is that it is an exemption from government, effectively, so that the government council tax provisions do not apply to student houses. There was no debate on this at the master plan process because we were not focusing on specifically on student housing at that point. And in a way, I've probably set a hair running tonight, and I'd like to try and recover it slightly by saying my main objective was to demonstrate two things. First of all, that there is a significant interest from the private sector in investing in Loughborough, and that is evidenced in part by some of these higher quality student properties. But is also, I was hoping this would be received as good news, there is a significant revival in the amount of investment, private investment, going into apartment type buildings for the general market rather than the student market. And that's the sort of message I would hope would resonate more clearly this evening, that that investment, which the town centre master plan was trying to encourage, does appear to be happening, is clearly manifesting itself in the Nottingham Road area. And as I say, I have to keep silent on which five other sites, but there are five other sites in and around the town centre where there is significant interest in, I said here, 250 apartments. The one today would push another 50 on top of that, so 300 apartments in and around the town centre.
Councillor Baldwin.
Yeah, in paragraph 6, 7 and 8 we're talking about about 1,000 apartments here. Now, given that each apartment is likely to have one car each, how are we going to accommodate that in terms of parking? Because there are some of these areas are really quite tightly packed.
Again, that will be a choice for somebody buying a house. It's rather like buying a terraced house. You don't buy a parking space with that. You rely on on-street parking. So the expectation is many of these people will not require a car. They won't be looking for a car.
It's quite an aspiration.
Well, again, from the point of view of the investors, they must be confident that there is a market because they are building these houses without dedicated, provided car parking. Now, as time goes on, we might want to look at schemes for providing licensing car parking in council car parks, etc. But at the moment, no, it's primarily marketed at households who will not require a dedicated parking space.
Through the chair, we've talked about it, head of planning and regeneration. It follows that these apartments are located in the middle of the town centre, close to where all the main services and facilities are, in close proximity to major bus routes and also the train station. So the type of people that are looking to move into these accommodation blocks are those that are more minded to utilise public transport and to want to maintain a presence in the town centre. And that's not going to suit everybody, but it suits some people at certain points in their life stage, at both ends of the life stage, actually. So, you know, as Mr. Hankin has said, these investors wouldn't be developing these properties if they thought there was any barrier to demand.
Councillor Tillotson, then Councillor Smiljanić.
Thank you, Councillor Tillotson. Picking up some comments of Councillor Forrest and Councillor Mercer's, actually, I mean, I'm very supportive of purpose-built student accommodation because it's not taking away family homes as historically we've had. And if Councillor Forrest is right and we do end up with significant numbers of empty homes in Stora Ward and other wards where there are traditional family homes that have become student accommodation, we need to make sure that we stay on top of that. And if they are empty for a year or even longer, and this year I spent some time around March, April in Stora Ward, and I was stunned how many houses were being renovated. Now, if they're renovating in March, April, that means almost certainly they've been empty for the whole year, because students don't tend to move out when it's coming up to exam time, do they? You know, so there is already an issue, and I think it's something that we need to get on top of, get the empty homes officer involved, possibly, in that.
Thank you. I'm glad it wasn't me that opened this section up. But I do support what my colleagues are saying. I have tremendous concerns because the Aubrey Gap site was mentioned, and the policy for no cars was going to be that it would be enforced. Well, it's impossible to enforce and stop cars parking where it's legally possible to do so. And we already suffer quite significantly from students in purpose-built accommodation who park on the side streets for 10 weeks and come and pick their cars up, because we see the AA and RAC vans all the time jump-starting every few weeks around where I live for a start, and elsewhere where I look after. So that's the first point. My other concern is that there is already a student block that is going into administration. And for the first time ever, Loughborough campus, I believe, I was told by somebody from the campus, from student services, that for the first time ever, there's been empty properties on the actual site, on the campus. And I think there is an assumption. I'm all for developing the town centre, and I'm all for flats for people, young professionals coming into Loughborough. I think it's a good idea. But again, it is that assumption that everybody living in a flat is going to work at the end of the railway station in Leicester and Nottingham and possibly Derby. So it means that nobody's going further away. So I do have concerns. And I know that, I think it's Nottingham now, are currently putting a 0% on the areas around the town centre for HMOs to be adapted in order to make sure that the town centre, I think it was the city centre in Nottingham, is going to be used. And then that stops some of the houses around, the family homes, being actually used. We're still seeing increasingly in Outwards, I've noticed that certainly in Nampanton and other areas around, the houses are being doubled in size. So we're getting one semi-detached house that's three bedroom, the other half is three bedroom, now doubled to six, and that's the spread of it. So, you know, while I'm all for the town centre being developed, I still have concerns that my other colleagues share. And when we come on to it, I would like to make the point about the Ladybird books and the graffiti or street art, whichever way you look at it. So I don't want to cut across this bit of the conversation now. I'll pick that up later.
Can I, Councillor Tillotson, I'd meant to say first time round, There is possibly an issue with non-students living in student accommodation. Mm. I know my son did for 2 years after he wasn't a student anymore. And I think that possibly is commonplace. Clearly they should be paying council tax, but aren't. And I don't know whether there's anything we can do about that.
Councillor Harris.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I think we need more clarity overall about this, and we haven't got enough time to talk about it. My little list started with student accommodation, the flats that have been built at the wharf. This is my patch, you know, Nottingham Road, and bounded by Derby Road. Excuse me. So we look at the students and looking at, you know, this is what it was all about. We started with, when I was on the planning committee about 4 or 5 years ago, that was all started at that point. Then we started looking at some of these student accommodations that were going into private hands down Ward's End, around here. And my last, the third thing, if these private dwellings that you were primarily built for students, they go into private hands, and then do they go back to the council so that they can build up their portfolios with social housing that we have to buy from developers? And nothing in any of this, I'm using the term affordable housing. Where is all of this? And so I'm in a muddle about the whole thing, and I think we need a lot more, all of us, the people on this committee need to look at this a little bit more closely and what it's about. Student housing that's been put into private property ownership, but where is, you know, Councillor Mercer talked about exemptions for council tax. You know, where is the when we have an ordinary development of 3,000 houses, we have this 30% affordable housing, 80% rent to buy, and the other 20% is social housing, apparently. This is where I came from. You know, what is the council getting out of this? But more more importantly, the residents of the borough that need some of this housing. And so I would quite like, Chair, it to be noted that we need more clarity. I would quite like to have a training course, she says, about this, because I think it's a muddle. There are all the way down Nottingham Road, half of that is my patch, and we've got all of this stuff all the way down Nottingham Road, all the way to the railway. And what is it? Is it student? Is it private? Where are we with all of this? And in fact, what is the council getting out of this? And I think we need to know. And thank you.
Okay. We're going to fill the agenda, so we'll take one more question. Councillor here wants to ask a question.
Cheers, thank you very much. I don't want to talk about student accommodation, actually. That's not one of the things. I respect all the discussion around it, but I think it's a minor point on a town centre master plan. And I want to talk about the implementation of the plan, because we've been discussing this now for 3 years, maybe 4 years, but nothing's happened, and that's why we've called it here today. And I just wanted to know, and I think, Dave Hankin, in your first sentence you said we're at the implementation phase. So we've talked about the plan, we've been at consultation, we've come back, we've had the feedback. Well, actually, we want you to get on with it, because the town centre's looking tired. It looks horrible. You know, it's 2003, 2004, the last time those cobbles went in. They don't get jet sprayed anymore. It looks, we can't replace a tree that's been missing for half a year. There's no connectivity. The high street looks really bad. It's poor. And I can understand why traders can't get people in when the students aren't here, because why would you come into Loughborough if it's looking that shabby? And that's, I think, the key to getting people in, is that we've got to spotten up. And I'm with you on this Ladybird Collective. I think that artwork is horrible. We're a professional university town with one of the best universities in the country, and we want to portray ourselves as professional. And I think it looks horrible and out of place, but that's a personal opinion. But then when you come to the town centre, the Rushes area where the new shops have gone in, there's still some empty units, I understand. Looks good. But then you're coming towards end, not so good. But then the high street is diabolical. And I just wanted to find out from yourself, as actually, okay, a timetable. Well, we're going to be doing this year, this in the next year, this the year after. And that's what, as a councillor, I want to hear. Not that we may be doing this, we may not be doing that, because if you go to Leicester City, the mayor in Leicester, he has done so much to improve the city centre there. Project after project after project after project. And here in Loughborough, the last thing we had done, major thing that we led through, I can't remember, the pedestrianisation of the town centre, the county council led on that.
An officer comment. It's Matt Bradford, head of cleansing and space. Just to say what about street cleansing, we did deep clean the whole town last summer with professional steam cleaning equipment. So I appreciate some of the points that we've made, but I don't think it's through lack of cleanliness. We have made quite a lot of efforts.
The point was tiredness over time. Thank you.
Right, final comment from Councillor Smith. just
a quickie. I'm not totally against the artwork that's up. Some of it is artwork. If we're portraying Loughborough with heroes and it's part of our theme, that's fine. If we're branding something like that, but the part I object to is when it's subtle branding of a product and a person in Loughborough. That's the bit that causes me concern. Subtle branding.
Okay, thank you. Through you, Chair, if I may just some comment on some of the points that have been raised very quickly, because I know the time's ticking on. The point that Councillor Smidovitz has made there, that's something of interest to our planning enforcement team, where a piece of artwork is an advert, either inferred or an actual fact. And we've looked to invite an application for planning permission or to consider taking enforcement action. That's something that we have done with some of these murals before. The point that Councillor Meyer has made about, you know, what are we actually doing for the town centre in real terms? There is an action plan for the town centre. It's a collective effort. The council is one partner in that collective effort. We are not of the scale of Leicester City, and the money that we have is much less. I think from the report that's before you tonight, you can see some of the things that are actually coming forward. There's some very big investments here that we've been able to talk about, and others which we've hinted at are coming around the corner. I'd suggest that actually there's quite a lot of activity around the master plan, but fair enough, more to come, I would suggest. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Well, there's a bit of a flow through here, because can I just move on to item 7, which is the Towns Fund.
Might I just make one comment,
very quickly,
please, Chair? And I forgot, in all of this diatribe of mine, what about parking, she says, because I am getting now an enormous amount of residents' complaints because my patch is between Nottingham Road and the town centre, and it is outrageous. I think we need to discuss this with the council.